It is that time. It is basketball season. So on today's edition of the College Basketball Power Hour, we get into the dominant SEC on both the men's and women's side. Plus, what was the better win? Auburn at Alabama or UConn women at South Carolina? All of that plus so much more. We'll talk to you soon. Welcome into the College Basketball Power Hour. That is right. We're a basketball podcast in the springtime. Just forgive me, please, if I call the show the College Football Power Hour a couple of times. Old habits die hard. Have some grace for me. So if you listen to the College Football Power Hour, welcome back to the College Basketball Power Hour. You can expect the exact same content that you got in the football podcast, but now we're just on the hardwood. And if you're new to the podcast, welcome. Happy to have you. I'm Caroline Fenton. That is Jason Fitz. And joining us to break down all things college basketball is our friend Ice Young, who joins us every single week. She is a college basketball analyst for CBS. Ice, welcome to the show. We're happy to have you, my friend.
What's up, friends? I'm happy to be here. It's the best time of the year is approaching. All things March Madness is coming. So I'm excited to break it all down.
Let's do it. Let's jump right in. If you are a football diehard and you're either still mourning your college football team's loss or you're a Philadelphia Eagles fan and you're still drunk from the Super Bowl and from the Super Bowl parade, love that for you, first of all. But if you're just now kind of turning your attention to college basketball, let's just give you a quick catch up of everything that you missed now that we're just about a month away from March Madness, which is just insane to think about. But let's start, I think, with the obvious place, not just in the men's side, but in the women's side as well. We have to start with the SEC, because the SEC is like insanely good. And the women's side, you got seven teams in the top 25. You got 10 teams projected in the tournament. That's the second most of any conference in the women's game, second only to the Big Ten, who has 13 projected teams in the tournament. On the men's side, however, though, it's kind of unprecedented, not just in this season of any conference, but really unprecedented success that the SEC has ever had on the men's side. Nine teams in the top 25. Five of those teams are in the top 10 alone. 13 to 14 of the 16 teams in the SEC projected to get into the tournament. Ice, just from your perspective, how dominant is the SEC on the men's side?
Oh, I mean, it's huge. It's huge. I keep thinking that as soon as we start the NCAA tournament, all of these teams in the SEC will be battle tested. They will be ready because they've been consistently playing against the best teams in the country night in and night out. It's tough when you have a stretch where you play Auburn, Tennessee, and then maybe you hit Arkansas. I mean, it's tough what, you know, Texas A&M has been able to do and just stay consistent and stay in the top 10. But I think all these teams are just going to be battle tested and ready to beat anyone because they've had so many different challenges in conference play.
Yeah, and to that end, a couple of things here. Number one, let's acknowledge that the SEC made a conscious decision, what, about a decade ago, that they were done being the other schools in college basketball. So they started investing a ton of money in facilities, a ton of money in coaches, a ton of money in just making basketball successful. And we're now seeing that pay off tenfold, right? Like, this is across the conference, the resources they put towards it. So what do you have now? You have these teams that are disciplined, that are well-coached, that play really hard on both sides of the ball. Like, if you're watching SEC basketball, it is a little reminiscent to SEC football in the sense that these are teams that are physical. They're beating each other up. The battle-tested portion of this, Ice, I love the way you said that, but I also think that, you know, these are high-quality coaches that know how to take advantage of the moment. Like, I kept watching over the weekend thinking that watching Alabama-Auburn was not just watching number one and number two. You're watching two teams that were incredibly deserving of that, two teams that don't beat themselves, two teams that play really hard on both ends of the floor. It's just, we were watching coaching clinic go on in this. And I think that's a big part of why the SEC has gotten so good. They've invested in coaches. They've invested in facilities. They've invested in basketball.
It wasn't that long ago. I mean, it was maybe 5 to 10 years ago where the SEC was Kentucky and then sometimes Tennessee and sometimes Florida. And then sometimes there was that one team that could get a little bit hot or make things interesting. But it wasn't top to bottom dominant. It wasn't that there was six or seven teams in this conference that were legitimate national title contenders. It was not that long ago that the SEC was just kind of just there, that it was Kentucky. Kentucky dominated the conversation in the SEC. And then once Kentucky had success and Florida had success and Tennessee had success, and then Arkansas started to have a little bit more success, at least in this day and age, you know, obviously they had a lot of success in the Nolan Richardson era. I think the rest of the SEC thought, wait, it's like really fun to be good at things other than baseball or football. At the SEC, if you look at the SEC as a football conference, well, the SEC is just as dominant in basketball, both men's and women's, as they are traditionally on the football field or on the diamond. So the SEC has been an absolute blast to watch.
Doesn't that, though, at some point also play into, like, look, we talk a lot about NIL and football, and I don't want to bog us down there, basketball, but I do think Ice, like, we have to look at it, some of the allocation of money here and say, hey, if you want to have a great basketball program, that's attainable. Like the roster sizes, like you can spend the money to really go out and build a great recruiting program for a lot of these schools. So I feel like part of this, like I don't want to make everything about NIL, but I think NIL hits college basketball, men's and women's, in a really powerful, impactful way.
It does. It does. And the marketing is growing on the women's side for more players to have their individual things, the shoes, the deals, right? You know, I've seen a ton of Paige Beckers and Flaje Johnson just posted their faces everywhere with multiple brands. And so all of that plays a part. You know, LSU women's basketball, a top 10 team in the country. You could arguably say that Kim Mulkey is one of the best coaches in the country at allowing her players to market themselves and bring money into their program, because you know that's what's going to help make it successful at this point. At the end of the day, yes, we still have a basketball game to play, but if my team has seven of the best players and your team has two of the best, I don't know. It's probably going towards me.
And it's been huge just in terms of retention, especially in the women's game. I think that also applies to the men's game as well. But there's just not that much money to be made in the next step in women's basketball. I just saw something that Caitlin Clark's projected salary for 2025 is $78,000. Well, that's how much a star in the NBA makes in like 20 minutes. In their total salary.
And if you can stick around, because that's really what it is. Like, you know that these things are growing. You know that the women's game in terms of money and resources is hitting numbers every other day. It seems like a new record is being broken in terms of viewership. But I also think, too, it's the cool part in the growth that's happening and seeing somebody like an Angel Reese on a McDonald's commercial. I mean, I'm like, how big was that check? You know, that's the one that I want to know about.
But there's also this level of look, this is the trickle-down effect of, particularly on the women's side, this is the trickle-down effect of several teams being good and several players coming in and being good. Like, we've seen more balance of talent in the country than ever before. And so what you're seeing is more and more women that are coming into college basketball that are ready to compete at a higher level. Like, we aren't where we were. You know, I was in Tennessee during the Pat Summitt era, and it was Pat Summitt versus Geno, right? Like, it was UConn versus Tennessee, and that was it. It didn't feel like there was much else to it. And now you look across the landscape, and my God, like, any given night that you turn on women's college basketball, there are stars playing all across the board. So that's why I think, Ice, your point on you know, patience to where everything's going, I think we have to remember that in the next 5 years, there's going to be a massive influx of talent to the W, which is part of why we're seeing expansion of the W. Like, you're going to see more and more talent come through. And as this talent comes through, they're going to be more marketable. They're going to be bigger stars, and they're going to be able to make a bigger impact to the college game. It's a really special time.
And when they stick around in college longer, they become more and more marketable. And year over year over year, you're falling in love with these personalities. Because you said it used to be Tennessee and UConn. Well, now you look at the top 10, it's UCLA, it's South Carolina, it's UConn, it's Kentucky, it's LSU, it's Notre Dame and Hannah Hidalgo. There are so many teams. There's been so much bouncing around in the top 10 and top 15 on any given night. What we think is the best team in the country can lose. And we saw that in several times this past week. We'll get into all of that. But the longer these players stick around, the more marketable they become, because the more we start to learn about them, the longer we can kind of hold on to these personalities and these stars versus maybe in the men's game. You look at Cooper Flagg. He's the biggest name in the men's game right now. He'll be in the NBA next year. You know, so you don't get to have those personalities that you can really cling to and you really fall in love with in the men's game. And I think that that creates so much more draw in the women's game. There's so many stories that we can unpack on the women's side. Want to touch on the men's side as well, kind of looking outside of the SEC. I mentioned Cooper Flagg. I just, from your perspective, just obviously he's a superstar. He's a name that I think any college basketball fan knows and knows very well. The marketability of Cooper Flagg. And then you also want to add on top of the fact that he plays in one of the biggest brands in all of college basketball at Duke. Just how good is Cooper Flagg?
He's good. He's good. what's so amazing about what he's been able to show us is obviously he's doing it as a freshman. You mentioned at Duke, and so the high expectations that comes with that. But they have been challenged. We saw games in the non-conference in which he turned the ball over at the end of the game and his team lost, and you could see the inexperience and the lack of maturity. But now, as you're watching Duke and ACC play, he looks like a sophomore. He looks like someone who has gotten some mileage. He looks comfortable and more smooth every single game that he plays on the court. His versatility, his commitment to being on the boards and being a two-way player. I think you talk about players at the next level that you want to have an impact. As much as you can score or get your way, all of that condenses at the next level because everyone else is so much better, is so much more athletic. And so I love what he's been able to do in terms of his growth. And I think just every time he steps on the floor, he looks more and more smooth to me. And it's exciting to see what they're going to be able to do in the tournament. But if these moments he's now prepared for, because he had some of those tough ones throughout the season already.
Well, and doesn't that speak, like, I think the best of the best ice, like, part of it is about their learning curve just being accelerated, right? So they pick up so much information so quickly, and that's part of what Cooper does. Also, his conditioning. You look early on, there were times that he seemed winded early on in the season. It's a different level of the game. That's taking
that
care of itself,
wall.
Too.
Yeah. They call it the freshman wall. It hits. Your chest burns. You're like, what is going on? I need oxygen.
And it's fun to see him seem so much more in control. I think it's interesting because this week he came out and said, you know, he'd love to come back, which I think is the right thing for him to be saying right now. And it just reminds you that Cooper has always sort of said the right thing, done the right thing, been in the right place. As a college basketball fan, I would love to see him come back because I think that's beautiful for the game. But most important when you're seeing somebody, man, I think you do have to appreciate he's only going to get so many shots at being part of Duke, North Carolina, right? He's only going to get so many shots at making his stamp in the legacy of what it means to be one of the greats at Duke. You know, so to me, I think there's a fine line between appreciating we may only get this one stab at it versus also looking at it and saying, man, the way he's just transcended throughout the course of the year, it's been a beautiful thing to watch.
Mm-hmm. I love seeing players grow and like that accelerated growth and just making the click. And then the last thing I too, bringing other people with you. You know, we know that if you're trying to get to an Elite Eight, a Final Four, a national championship, which is the expectation for that program, you have to make other people around you better. And you could certainly see the growth in all of the other young pieces around him.
Yeah, no doubt. And I think it's probably an important reminder that he's what, 18? 19 years old, that growth needs to be made both physically, mentally, emotionally, just, you know, being able to physically contend for the grind that is an entirety of a college basketball season. But understanding too, at 18, 19 years old, you are the leader of this team. That at 18, 19 years old, all eyes are on you. That it feels like so many of the college basketball conversations that we hear nationally, whether it's on ESPN or CBS or Fox or whatever it might be, a lot of those conversations start with Cooper Flagg. And that's a lot of responsibility on a young guy, but a responsibility that, you know, he's, I guess, been gifted with how good that he's been this entire season. Let's talk about UConn. All eyes this year have been on Cooper Flagg, but all eyes will also be on UConn as well. Back-to-back national champions. Fast forward to this year. Fitz, you live in Connecticut. UConn is not the same dominant force that we maybe saw last year or the year before. UConn, it felt like, skated through the NCAA tournament last year. This year, they can fall to Colorado on any given day. Not a very good team. They can beat the Creightons and the Gonzagas of the world, but then they struggle with the unranked Seton Halls of the world. And then you add on top of the fact that Van Hurley, Does Dan Hurley things? So you live in Connecticut. What's kind of been the conversation surrounding this UConn team and also surrounding Dan Hurley antics?
I think it's funny because I didn't really understand until I moved up here at the time for ESPN that this area live, eats, and breathes everything UConn basketball. Like, UConn basketball is a way of life to Connecticut that I don't think a lot of people understand. And it was real when there were overtures that Hurley might go to the Lakers. Local restaurants offered free food for life if he chose to stay. And when he did, those restaurants were packed with people that were just hoping he would walk in. Like, it is alarming sometimes what a sensation he is and how much the program means to this area. And I can tell y'all, like, I think people up here are nervous because what happens is last year there was an expectation that they would take a step back. They didn't. So you suddenly presume that that means they're invincible. But, man, Ice, you can only lose so many people to the league, and you can only have to go through so much transition before you as a coach are like, man, I'm coaching a lot of just basics that I didn't have to coach before about standards and the way we do things and effort, all of these things. And I feel like Hurley is just up against one. So he's agitated because he's coaching stuff he hasn't had to coach for a minute because he's getting a new team worked in under this. Like, this feels like a much different version of Connecticut.
I definitely agree. First of all, when you win a championship, just one, the target is on your back. When you win back to back, the target is like quadruple the size, because now people are saying, like, we have to stop them. There's no way. And then, like Caroline mentioned, the way in which they did it, the dominance, honestly. And so I feel like this is what you expect. We've seen it kind of on the woman's side in South Carolina, but the best example I could give you is UConn, right? Like, they haven't won a national championship since 2016. Before that, they won four straight. It was like nobody was even in sight of beating them. And so I think the target is a lot. I think players decide that they want to switch things up. And so they don't necessarily want to go to the same place where they're always winning. They maybe want to get a title in their name somewhere else. But also, I can speak from just, one, the era of NIL that we've talked about and how that affects coaches. And then also, when you're not getting that high level of retention, you do feel like you're starting over. And so I absolutely think that that's where the frustration is for Dan. The issue, though, is that sometimes some of these antics are more distractions than they are passion for your players or in support of them. I've played for animated coaches. You know, I've had my fair share. And sometimes you're like, yeah, coach, let's go. Take our side. And other times you're like, bro, chill out. We need to drop the play. What are we running right now? And so sometimes I think it's a little bit of a balance that he doesn't always weigh the greatest from the outside looking in.
Yeah, I feel like we're being, as a college basketball landscape, I feel like we're being a little too soft on Hurley, forgiving on Hurley. Because, like, to me, the standard is the standard, right? So, like, this is all I'm saying. If it was a player, if we had a player mic'd up, if Cooper Flagg had been caught on mic saying to a ref, don't you turn your back on me, I'm the best player in college basketball. If he had been heard saying that, we would have destroyed him. And instead, because it's a coach, we're like, oh, that's just Hurley being Hurley. I mean, he's that's the way he treats everybody. I don't know, man, like, because coaches sit here all the time and they tell you that everything you do represents your school. And I guess my question to Hurley is, like, are you looking in the mirror thinking that this is the best representation of your school? Because you're the highest paid educator in the state. Like, that you need to be held to a certain, how do I represent Connecticut? If players represented their school with the same level of attitude that Hurley brings to it, I don't think it would be as beloved. Like, it's his success that makes everybody say you can't question it. But I don't know, man. I think there is some level of plenty of great coaches. Tom Izzo just set a record for the winningest coach in the Big Ten. Is Izzo out here walking around saying, don't turn your back on me, I'm the best that's ever done it? No, like, it's a level of swagger we're not as forgiving when other people have it.
You can, or we're, get just away not with catching those coaches.
Yeah, that's fair too. That's fair too.
That is very fair. And I think also...
You know, I love when I'm on a broadcast and I'm on the side of the coaches, because you hear some of those things and you're like, oh, awesome. Can't repeat that, but so glad I heard it.
And I think that's it amazing. Gets magnified because we all expect this from Dan Hurley, that if Dan Hurley does something, says something, it's just like, oh, there's another thing. I think it's kind of similar with Kim Mulkey on the women's side, that everything that she says might get picked apart and magnified because we just expect these, you know, very bold statements to come from a coach like that. But I do think that you can get away with a lot when you're winning. We've seen that in any sport. Like Bill Belichick is a grade A asshole. And it was fine because they were winning Super Bowls. But when the Patriots stopped winning, the shtick got old real quickly. Now, I'm not saying that UConn is now, you know, at the depths of men's college basketball and they have no hopes to make the tournament. That's not what I'm saying in the slightest. But right now, UConn is sitting at fourth in their conference. Right now, there's some discussions about UConn's resume and how it's very fair to poke some holes in their resume. Now, I'm not saying they're going to miss the tournament entirely, but I am saying that maybe Dan Hurley's antics can get old a lot quicker when they are not that same dominant UConn wagon that we have seen over the past couple of years, Fitz.
I mean, he likes being the bad guy, too. Like, let's be honest. He likes the attention. He's in on it, which is fine. But if you are in on the joke, then you don't get to complain about, well, I just wish they were micing up the other guys and paying attention to what they like. You just these are the moments that I feel like, hey, as coaches, accountability is high, which means when you say it, you better be able to back it up. You better be ready to back it up and try to walk it back with some sort of a, you know, I guess they just need clicks. That it's just, man, life ain't that simple. And coach is smart enough to know that. He is smart enough to know exactly what he's doing.
And I think he's smart enough to know, or at least I would expect that he is smart enough to know. He has accomplished too much and has too much respect as a coach for me to not kind of give him that benefit of the doubt of he knows what his team needs. He knows what his locker room needs. I use an example of what we heard from Bruce Pearl, and we'll get into the Auburn-Alabama game this past weekend because it was a great game, one of the best games we've seen so far this season. But in his post-game press conference, Bruce Pearl, Auburn head coach, said, "We deserve to be the number one team in the country. We earned the right to be the number one team in the country." If you know Bruce Pearl, you know that's kind of uncharacteristic of him to say that. He always likes to kind of dilute expectations, to kind of always play that underdog mentality. So I think when Bruce Pearl said that, he wasn't telling us that. He wasn't telling the media that. He wasn't sending a message to AP poll voters. He was talking to his locker room because he knew that his locker room needed to hear that. He wanted his locker room to get fired up like, yeah, we're the number one team in the country. And we just proved that. We've proven that week over week. Does Dan Hurley feel that same way? Does he feel like those antics are what his locker room needs to get fired up? Or is it becoming more of a distraction? That's something that I think we'll start to look into over the next couple of weeks. And of course, once we get into the NCAA tournament. All right, we're going to take a quick break here. Coming up next, Power Hour, Power Rankings. All right, Power Hour, Power Rankings, our first Power Rankings of the College Basketball Power Hour. I'm just going to go ahead and give us two contenders for our top spot in the Power Rankings of which was a more dominant win. On the women's side, we had UConn, fresh off of a loss against Tennessee, go into South Carolina, Colonial Life Arena, a place where the South Carolina women's team has not lost in 71 games. And then the Huskies handed South Carolina their worst loss since November 2010, a 29-point victory for UConn. Did something that no one's been able to do to South Carolina, not just this season, but in years, and that is absolutely dominate them for the entirety of the game. That is one contender. On the other side, on the men's side, Auburn went into Alabama. I think fair to say that matchup, number one versus number two, is the biggest matchup in the history of the state of Alabama, I think fair to say. Auburn went into Alabama, an incredibly difficult place to play. They got out to a 9-0 start, never trailed, and Auburn took down number two Alabama 94-85. Ice, in your opinion, which was a more dominant performance?
Yeah, first of all, a credit to both teams, Auburn and UConn, because they were on the road. I mean, in conference play, in the thick of it, we're in February. to go on the road and dominate both of these games like they did, ridiculous at this point. Like, I think everybody was stunned and shocked on the women's side because you just don't see South Carolina lose, but also lose like that. I mean, they lose close games down to the wire, a last second shot. They were down 49-23 at halftime. I mean, I just was so impressed, wildly impressed with UConn and their start. We talk a ton about, you know, Paige Beckers and AZ and Sarah Strong, their freshman sensation on the inside. But I've been saying for the longest, guys, that if UConn wants to get to a Final Four and win a national championship, they need a big three. And AZ Fudd scoring 28 points really emerges and and solidifies herself to me as a player for them that's in their big three. To be quite honest, you don't see Dawn Staley lose like that. That was crazy impressive to me. Fitz, curious to get your thoughts.
Yeah, no, and look, I love the AZ point, by the way. Due to injury, I think AZ and Paige have played together 38 of the 130 game in their career like that.
Yes.
Injuries have just derailed that entire process of what was supposed to be a dynamic duo in college basketball. So I hear you on all that, and particularly seeing that happen to South Carolina, it felt surreal. I think that's the more impressive win. I do think, though, the fact that Auburn went up big, and then found themselves in a tight game. Like we talked earlier, we talked at the beginning of the show about learning something about yourself and how it plays into the tournament. Man, I think Auburn realized, hey, we can defend the perimeter against anybody. They held Alabama to 20% shooting from the outside, which I thought was significant. But also just this game was not a game, then it was a game, and then it was not a game again. I think there's a big learning opportunity. So, like, weirdly, I think Auburn got the better education about themselves in the process. But I don't know that we've seen a more impressive win in college basketball in the last 5 years than we saw what Connecticut did to South Carolina.
Yeah, just I mean, and Dorrance right now.
We don't see.
Yes, no. And I feel like endurance right now is the name of the game, right? Which team has the most endurance to finish this race, i.e. get to the end of the regular season strong, and then obviously the tournament. But I completely agree with you about Auburn. And to me, it's the maturity. It's that when it becomes a close game, they didn't look panicked. They didn't look like, oh my gosh, like we're not surprised. Like they looked like, no, we're playing against the number two team in the country. Eventually, they're going to get it together. And now we have to make a response.
For both of those games, they kind of proved the same thing. Two incredibly hyped up matchups. I mean, Auburn, Alabama had college game day, 1-2, only the fourth time in history in college basketball that we got an in-state 1-2 matchup. Fun fact, it was the second one that Bruce Pearl was involved in, going back to 1-2 matchup, Memphis and Tennessee, I think 2007, 2008. So incredibly hyped up matchup, a bitter rival on the road. Same thing with South Carolina and UConn. You've got two of the best coaches in women's college basketball, Geno and Dawn Staley, in one of the toughest environments in all of women's college basketball. And what Auburn and UConn both proved is that they can go on the road in incredibly difficult places and incredibly hyped up matchups with all eyes on you, and you can win and you can do it handedly. So learned that about both teams. And I agree with both of you that I think the UConn win at South Carolina was not just the more dominant performance of the two that we're talking about, but one of the most dominant performances that we've seen on both sides, men's and women's, all season long. But I think what I learned about Auburn is that they can beat you in several different ways. Because what Auburn did was out-offense one of the most high-powered offenses in all of college basketball in Alabama. That Auburn didn't panic. That Alabama, when the shots weren't falling, that they were kind of looking around like what do we do? Like, that's our brand of basketball, is we just shoot threes. So if the threes aren't falling, then how can I trust Alabama to win some of these big-time matchups? Auburn, on the other hand, they have no problem winning a 94-85 game on the road. And then you go back a couple of weeks ago against Tennessee. They're at home, granted, also a very tough place to play in the jungle. And they can win a, what was it, 53-51 kind of game against one of the best defensive teams in college basketball in Tennessee. So that gave me even more confidence for what Auburn can do in the postseason. And that is win some of these gross, slug it out defensive battles and also win some of these more high scoring games like they did against Alabama.
Especially the second half of that game for Auburn, Alabama. the refs started to call. I mean, that game got real physical and the refs were calling it real physical. And I thought it was a pretty big statement that Auburn didn't back down, because Alabama obviously was figuring out, hey, we're going to make this thing ugly and we're going to get as many ugly transition points as we can. And it worked for a minute, and Auburn calmed down and never backed down from the physical contact from there. They didn't change the way they were attacking the hoop. Like, I thought that was all a really smart, hey, we know at this point that the game's being called some kind of way. And I'm not saying that's not fair. It's just you got to adjust as the refs adjust. And as the refs were just calling everything late in that game, Auburn didn't back down from that, which I think, again, those are the statements that are real. Like a Sweet 16 game that all of a sudden gets tight and you don't love the way the refs are calling it, they've been there. They've done that. They've survived that. I think that'll pay off for them late.
The free throw numbers were insane. Auburn shot 32. Alabama shot 35. I was like, Jesus. Goodness.
That is insane. The turnover numbers, too. Auburn only turned the ball over 3 times against Alabama. That is absolutely crazy. It just feels like Auburn, like, they've been a great team all season long. Like, do not get me wrong. But it feels like everything is just starting to click for Auburn at the most absolute perfect time. Besides those two games, whether it's team performances, individual performances, what kind of stuck out to you for a power ranking candidate?
Yeah, I would say Mikayla Blake for Vanderbilt women's basketball. Y'all, she dropped 55 points. Jason, this was her second 50-point game of the season for Vanderbilt in their win. She set a new freshman single-game scoring record. You just don't see that a ton, but also, I mean, she's a guard, so, like, it's not like it's Asia Wilson inside and catch, turn, layup, and she's just getting 50 of those. Like, she is doing her work on all three levels. That was huge to me on the women's side. My goodness.
Yeah, and by the way, I'll go back to something we already talked about, but you can see sort of the change in the way girls that are coming up in the sport are playing, and you can see, like, shooters are shooting better than ever before. So, like, people creating their own shot has become, I think, one of the big things that, you know, the trickle-down effect of what happens from seeing people like Caitlin shoot the way that she shot. You know, it's a huge part. While we're giving props to the women's game, also, we quickly mentioned it, but Notre Dame, I mean, the way they're playing this season, sitting in number one in all the land, I think we need to tip our caps at this point, because there are certainly plenty of brands in women's college basketball that have become dominant. And Notre Dame's over here just saying, hey, while y'all are paying attention to all of this going on, best team in women's college basketball is right here in South Bend. Shout out to them.
I really enjoy watching the Irish play. They play with 2 point guards and Hannah Hidalgo and Olivia Miles that are just sensational in all aspects of the game, like offense, defense, rebounding, assists, steals, you name it, they're doing it. To me, they have been the team that I have said all season, if someone can beat South Carolina, and if South Carolina remains the standard, this is the team that I think that can beat them. But now, I think with South Carolina dropping 2 of their last 3 games, and they've lost to Texas, they've lost to UConn, I think there is an opportunity for Notre Dame to stay at number one. But also, I think this national championship now is just up for grabs. I think there are 3 or 4 teams that can really get it at this point, because I don't think South Carolina is the standard right now of the team to beat. I think we've seen that they're beatable.
Notre Dame has just been the face of consistency. Like, they haven't lost since November. And I watch Notre Dame and I see the way that they're beating teams and the teams that they have beaten and the star power that they have. You mentioned Hannah Hidalgo and Liatu King, who is averaging, you know, double-digit rebounds a game. And it makes me think, like, how in the world did this team lose to unranked Utah earlier in the season? But, some of those early season losses might be what some of these national championship contending teams need to kind of get right and to realize, okay, this is what we need to do better, that even if we're a top 3, top 5, top team in the nation, like, we still have to bring our A game, game in, game out. And that's exactly what Notre Dame has done since some of those earlier season losses. Going back to your Mikayla Blake's point, though, Ice. Mikayla Blake's, you mentioned free throws in the Auburn-Alabama game. Just like, you know, the let them play crowd was just like had their pitchforks in that game. But Mikayla Blake's attempted 24 free throws. She made 23 of them. And after the game, she was talking about how upset she was that she didn't make that last one. And I like Michaela, like, you got 55 points. It's okay if you missed that last one. In the final second of regulation, Vanderbilt's down three. Michaela Blake's at the free throw line, makes all three of her free throw attempts. Ball doesn't even touch the net. They go through. It is such a, like, just a perfect shot on all three of them. Three made free throws sends it to overtime. Like, that is the most, like, ice in your veins kind of moment. That is the moment that when you're playing, like, backyard basketball, like, okay, you know, you need to make this free throw to take it to overtime, to tie it up, or to win the game. Like, these are the kind of moments when you're a kid that you dream about. And Michaela Blake stood up in the right moment to send that game to OT, and ultimately for Vanderbilt to beat Auburn in that one. In overtime, Michaela Blake's 11 points, Auburn as a team, 4. So just absolutely insane performance for her. Fitz, what is a contender for you? Individual performance, team performance, whatever it might be, a coach performance maybe, that is a power ranking contender for you?
I think there's some love to be given to Texas A&M for winning yet another close game. It just feels like, look, A&M is doing this thing right now where nothing looks easy. And every game you sit there and say, man, I don't know. And then by the end of it, you're like, no, I know. Like, I got to give A&M a lot of credit because they've had a rough week and a half, 2 weeks of games that have been close game after game after game. And I keep thinking that they're going to run out of steam, and they don't. So I think there's something to just the consistency with which A&M is approaching some of these close games, Ice, that we got to give some love to.
I totally agree. I mean, we've chatted about how tough the SEC is and how tough it is to stay consistent. And they've just remained very solid. They continue to climb up the poll. They're up one spot from last week. And it's another SEC team that's in the top 10. Like, what can you say?
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, like, being able to be consistent in the grind of an SEC schedule. We just got done talking about just how dominant the SEC truly is. My only reservation with Texas A&M, though, is yes, they're a top 10 team. But are they Auburn good? Are they Alabama good? Can they contend with Tennessee's defense? That Texas A&M deserves to be a top 10 team in the country. But in terms of the hierarchy, not just in the country, but in the SEC, can we put them up there with Auburn, Alabama, Florida? I'll throw them out there as well. Like, I look at those three programs as legitimate Final Four and national champion contenders. Can we put Texas A&M in that conversation, Ice?
I'll say this. The NCAA tournament is all about matchups. I don't care what you say, it is all about matchups. So if they get the right matchups, I can see Texas A&M in a Final Four. I can see them because they're battle-tested. They've stayed consistent. They've had games that you mentioned earlier where they've won different ways. They've had to win different ways. You said that about Auburn. I think the same exists for them. I'm not sure if right now they've won a dominant way in which we see them in terms of an Auburn or a Florida, et cetera. But I think matchups in the tournament, they could wiggle their way to an Elite Eight and then get to a Final Four by magic. Because that's half of what happens in the tournament. It's magic. It's just you get the good luck juice.
Yeah, matchups and guard play. And they can get the guard play to win. I mean, they certainly can. So, you know, I agree with you that do they buy the eye test? Do they stand in the same category as Auburn to me? No, but could I see them, especially like if they're able to limit their turnovers and play the way that I think they can on the perimeter, they can win some tournament games. They can be a disruptor.
Mm. March Madness, March Magic, all of those words apply. All right, quick break here. We'll take a look ahead to what we're watching coming up this week, coming up next. Some juicy matchups, both in men's and women's.
No,
Fitz, I'm bringing juicy as the college basketball power hour. Yes, I am.
Juicy has been an argument on this show since day one. And now Caroline's just like flippantly throwing juicy in, like suddenly the standards have changed around here.
Am I wrong? Is never, top 10, top 15 matchups? Is that not just take a bite out of the juiciest orange or apple? Pick your fruit of choice. Isn't
burger.
That just the juiciest matchups? Yeah, juicy.
You're too healthy
burger.
For me. She said apple. Yeah. I immediately thought burger.
Juicy burger also applies. Whatever your snack of choice might be, your juicy choice of snack, go ahead and throw that in there. All right, juicy matchups coming up. a la Fitz, wink, wink, Fitz. Fitz, I'll start with you since I totally just you know, rattled your tail feathers there. What are you watching this week?
All right. So first of all, I love Friday night basketball. I'm just going to be unapologetic for that. There's something about the Friday night Fox package that I just like watching. It's fun to me. And then I get Michigan State at Michigan on Friday night in the men's game. Michigan State just, as I referenced earlier, Izzo just set the all-time winning record. Michigan State's interesting to me, guys, because for years, my argument against Michigan State in the tournament particularly has been they don't have, like, ever since they didn't have Cassius Winston, they haven't had that guy that's like, hey, I need a bucket, I get a bucket. This Michigan State team is interesting to me because they got a couple of guys that I think can do that, but my God, they can't shoot from the outside. Like, this is just a wildly inconsistent three-point shooting team. So to me, one of the nice things that we start to get over the next few weeks is a real indication of who a team is in the tournament. So now you've got Michigan State, Michigan taking each other on, and I've got to see a better, like, I think Michigan State, if they could shoot the ball consistently from the outside, could be a dangerous Final Four type team in this year's tournament. But the problem is we saw a little bit of that. They got hot in December, January, didn't lose. Everybody's like, yes, this is it. And then we hit February, and it's like, oh, yeah, they can't shoot. These are the games that just, to me, are so prove-it and important to Michigan State's ability to, in offensive sets, generate points. Not talking about transition basketball. I'm talking about, like, everybody knows what's coming. Can you generate a basket when you need it? I'm worried about that for Sparty, so I think this is a big game ice for Sparty to prove themselves.
I totally agree with you. First, rivalry games. I mean, it just means something different, too, when you've got Michigan and Michigan State on the floor together. So I think it says a lot about their pride going into this game. And your point about, you know, their offense scoring, not just in transition, is really just what's necessary when you're preparing for the tournament. Like, I feel like you can't stress it enough, just winning in different ways. I also think, though, that that's where coaching is really challenged. Like, if you know your team can't score in the half court consistently, you have to have the best quick hitter package I've ever seen in my life. Like, you need to be running all the missed decoys, all the staggers, all the back doors, all the lob options. Because you know that naturally that's not what your team excels in. And so I also think it's a challenge on the coaching staff to be prepared to have some quick hitters to go when they need it down the stretch.
Yeah, no doubt. Ice, what about you? What are you watching? Either men's or women's or both?
Yes, definitely both. I'll stay on the men's side. Number 5, Houston. And number 8, Iowa State. Big 12 game. I love both of their styles of play. Houston, we know, is known for that lockdown defense. And then Iowa State, high-powered offense. I mean, the Cyclones can really score 100 points a game if they wanted to. They are fun to watch. They play a great style. They shoot the three like no other. So I think this will be a great matchup of Which is going to win, great defense or great offense? And then on the women's side, Notre Dame at number 13, NC State. That is a 1-13 matchup. I just think that's great for the ACC. Also, Notre Dame undefeated right now in conference play, and they have a tough schedule right before the ACC tournament. This will be one of their toughest games, so I'm excited to see how they finish the regular season.
Yeah, you mentioned that schedule, by the way. That schedule is like, if they end this season in the number one team in all the land, it'll be because they've earned it, right? Like, this schedule has been difficult for them over the course of the last couple of weeks anyway. So, yeah, interesting that they don't get to take their foot off the gas just because they're number one.
Right. And I'm really intrigued to see how they respond to being the number one team in the country. Like, Notre Dame has kind of sat back and watched chaos ensue over the last couple of weeks that's led to a ton of shakeup in the top 5 and the top 10. We saw UCLA go on the road and lose to USC. We saw South Carolina, like we just mentioned, get clobbered by UConn. We saw a great Texas LSU matchup. LSU lost on the road. That Notre Dame's kind of sat back and watched the rest of the world burn. That now they've been the beneficiaries of that. So how does Notre Dame respond to seeing chaos ensue elsewhere, avoid chaos happening for themselves, and respond to being the number one team in the country? I'm super excited to see that. What I'm going to be watching, another SEC matchup, LSU women go on the road to Kentucky. Kentucky, I'm excited to see how Kentucky kind of responds to losing to Ole Miss. Ole Miss is not a ranked team, but Ole Miss is a team that can beat you on any given night. Coach Yeo, the coach at Ole Miss, one of my favorite coaches in the sport. Ole Miss is a very talented team. I think that they've just kind of suffered having a really rough and tough schedule in the SEC. But LSU, like I said, just went on the road and lost to Texas. LSU's only losses on the season, South Carolina, a top 10 team, Texas, a top 10 team. So LSU has kind of a get-right game back at home against an unranked Georgia team. How can LSU respond going on the road to a hungry Kentucky team, and how they take on Georgia A. Moore, one of the most exciting players to watch in the SEC. I think LSU has one of the best big threes in women's college basketball. You got Flauje Johnson, you've got Anissa Morrow, you've got Mikayla Williams, but you've also got Georgia A. Moore, who is a dominant player that can take out, can take over any game that she plays. So I'm excited to kind of see that three-on-one matchup and how LSU responds to losing on the road at Texas Ice.
Yeah, this is an important game for them, really, because they didn't challenge themselves a lot in the non-conference. And so getting in conference play and then losing, like you said, to Texas, to South Carolina, you need to get one of these ranked wins that are a top 15 ranked win. Like, this is a must win to me in terms of NCAA resume and how you can stack up and building your seeding. So I think this is a measuring stick game for LSU. And then at the same time, we know Georgia A. Moore is not to be played with this time of year. This time last year, she was setting records for assists with no turnover games and scoring 20, 30 points. So I also think that she's primed and experienced to handle the tough guard play that LSU comes with. It will definitely be a dogfight in the SEC.
I do think you're both right. Also, a little bit of a prove it aspect for this, because if you just look at the record for LSU, that's different than looking at what the record actually tells us, right? Like how it's actually played out. They're measured by being a championship caliber team. The two championship caliber teams they faced this year, they lost to both by about the same margin, by what, 8 or 10 points, if memory serves. So to me, there's just this little moment here where, hey, exactly who is LSU is proven in these moments.
Yep. Yeah. Very, very fair point. All right. Coming up next, Fitz sat down with Roy Williams, a legend in college basketball, of course, former North Carolina head coach, former coach at Kansas as well, to sit down about his initiatives and what he has been working on, and also a little bit of the state of college basketball. We'll hear from Roy Williams coming up next.
Jason Fitz with Yahoo Sports, hanging out with basketball legend, icon, coach Roy Williams. Coach, joining us on behalf of Verizon, doing something that's inspiring and incredible. I cannot wait to talk to you about it, Coach. This is a really cool initiative you're doing with Verizon. But before we do that, okay, I'm talking to a legend about college basketball. I got to talk to you a little bit about college basketball, because I always think it's interesting when you can talk to the icons, and you are one of them. When you watch college basketball today in a name, image, likeness world where the game has changed so much, what stands out to you?
Well, when I watch the game, I still watch the game that I love. You know, when the referee steps in there a couple of weeks from now and throws the ball up and it's Duke against North Carolina, you know, nothing's going to change. And, you know, everything around the court, outside the court, has changed dramatically. There's no question there. But I enjoy watching ball. You know, there's no question about that. And I've only missed two North Carolina home games in 4 years, and I expect to continue seeing those. And I've traveled around the country and watched buddies of mine still coach 10 days or so ago. I went to Knoxville, Tennessee, and saw Rick Barnes' Tennessee team play Missouri. And I'm so old, Dennis Gates is Missouri's coach, and 100 years ago I recruited him out of high school. So, but I do still enjoy the game. And to me, the beauty of the game of basketball is taking five guys, very gifted, very talented guys, and trying to make them into that one team and for everybody working together. And so I still enjoy watching that part of it, too.
Is there sort of a line in the sand for development when you're trying to develop guys, but you also got to keep them with your program? You don't want them to go somewhere else. Don't want them to go to the NBA. Like, how do you walk that line as a coach?
It is really hard, really hard. And it's a funny thing, and I think this is one of the few really funny things, but I used to shake hands with every player on the other team as we walked around. Good game, son, you were great. You know, we were lucky or whatever. Just say one word, two words, it's one sentence. I mean, And but it's changed a little bit now. In the old days, when I was at Kansas, we recruited the JUCOs. So I recruited the high schools and the JUCOs. And then the transfer portal and everything came in. So you recruited, you know, the high schools and the JUCOs, and you got to recruit your own players to make sure they come back. And now I've really watched the handshake line at the end of the game. And some of the other coaches, they stop and shake the hand of the guy who had the real big game against them, because they know that he might be a prospective player for them too. And so that's the humorous bad side of some things. But I still enjoy the game, love watching the game, love watching different teams play. And it is, to me, taking five very gifted individuals, trying to make them form into what's best for the team. And I love that part of it.
I mean, you just watched somebody that you know well, Coach Izzo, set a record, all-time winningest coach in the Big Ten. What does a record like that mean for a coach that's been at it as long as he has?
Well, he would downplay it a little bit, because that's Tommy. I sent him a text, sent him two texts, as a matter of fact. But he'll downplay it a little bit. And yet, Bob Knight was a big bear in the room. And he just passed the big bear in the room. So I, one of my texts, I told him, you are the big bear in the room now. But he's a great coach, but even better person. I was really, really happy for him. But we've lost the last 3 or 4 years. We've lost a lot of those guys that I competed with and against for so many years. But I'm glad that we still have Tommy out there doing some great things.
I got to ask you then about maybe the more controversial coach at college basketball right now, because Hurley and UConn, certainly unparalleled success, but he'll let you know. And I mean, you've been the face of college basketball in your life. You know what that feels like. For a coach to be as brazen as Hurley is at times about his accomplishments, well, how do you react to that when you see
it? That's Danny. That's the way I handle it. I've been in their home. I recruited Bobby a little bit before I left North Carolina's assistant and go to Kansas. I love Big Bob. I mean, the whole family's great to me. Danny Hurley came along as, oh, yeah, that's Bobby's little brother. And Danny was a very, very good player himself. And it's become an excellent coach and a fiery coach. The whole family. I mean, you don't play for Big Bob and you're his son. You think you're going to go over there and cross his knees and lean back in the chair and watch for 40 minutes? That crap ain't happening today. But no, I love Danny. He's said some tough things with the officials just during this season. I was in Maui for 3 days and it was ugly at times. And then I saw some of his comments about they should watch the other guy too. But you know, when you've been as successful as Danny has, they're going to watch you even more. But he is a great kid. I'm, again, 74 years old. I can call anybody kid if I want to. But he is a great coach. And he'll settle into even more being Danny. And that's all I can ask for, is I think he does a great job.
It's also interesting to me, Cooper Flagg is sort of the biggest name in college basketball this year. And you've had some incredible players under your coaching tutelage. When you have the best in the sport, how do you approach that? What's the key to getting the most out of them?
Well, you don't have to for most of them. I mean, I had Tyler Hansbrough, who was first team All-American 4 years, and he was the best player. And with those kind of guys, you don't have to coach them very much. You just give them a little advice here and there and let people know that you are talking to them. It's not just them kind of thing. But Tyler made me look good, and I think Cooper's doing the same thing to John. But I do not know him, have not had any conversations with him. But from a distance, I really admire the way he plays. I really admire the way he's handled all the attention. And I did not cheer for him a couple of weeks ago, and I will not be cheering for him 2 or 3 weeks from now. But I just think he's one of the best players in the country, regardless of what grade. And the fact that he's a freshman and has a chance to be the player of the year in the country, he's accomplished so many amazing things.
All right. So let's talk about admiration, because I have a ton of admiration for what you're doing with Verizon. You and Verizon are partnering. Verizon's given over $10 million to 6,500 different residents in the state of North Carolina to help them post the hurricanes that came through. Talk a little bit about what you're doing and what this experience has been like.
Well, this morning has been awesome. I've been on the phone or FaceTiming with some people that are one to five of those people, for example, the 6,500, that Verizon is really taking the debt away from them. They're paying the debt off. And to me, it's the most amazing thing. And I'm hopeful that other corporations will see it. We have so many people helping people here in North Carolina now, but they can use so much help. But Verizon, one of the things they say that I love is, we will always stand by you. And this is my home. I'm in Western North Carolina, and I grew up there, spent most of my life there, except when I was in Kansas or in Chapel Hill. My family has always lived here. The devastation from the hurricane specifically is the most horrific thing people cannot imagine. I saw it on TV. I saw it on the Weather Channel. But when I came back to Western North Carolina myself, we have a home there. There were three different ways to get to my home. Two of the roads were completely blocked, and the other one was one lane. And to go in downtown Asheville and see this peaceful little river, and now you see trucks and cars down in that riverbed, and it's been like 100 days since then, and I don't know when they're going to get out. And so Verizon's doing some great things here, and it's been a neat deal for me to be on the phone with some of those people who have received some of those funds.
Coach, what's Carolina mean to you?
It's home. I coached at Kansas for 15 years. It's one of the greatest places you can be for college basketball. And I still remember coming back to Chapel Hill to see our children when they were in school, and driving up to the mountains of North Carolina. And you're up, going up Interstate 40, and you see the mountains for the first time. And it's one of those good, warm, fuzzy feelings that comes over you. And there's a song out there, country song now, I think By Dirt may be the name of it. And I've said this, and I did it comically or humorously at first, but I really believe this is my dirt. And being able to help people here is really a neat deal.
Well, I can tell you, Jordan Davis is a good friend of mine, and he's proud of that By Dirt song. I will let him know that story, Coach. I appreciate your time. I appreciate you hanging out with me. Everybody appreciates what you've done for college basketball and what you and Verizon are doing for the people in North Carolina. Thanks for hanging out.
Jason, thank you very much. And getting that message out there, there may be somebody else coming up to help, but enjoy your day and have a good time. And we'll both be watching college basketball for a while.
Amen to that. Thank you, Coach.
Thank you.
Fitz, kudos to you. Awesome interview. I want to talk to Roy Williams every single day. I want to sit down with him at a dinner table and just get his thoughts on everything that has ever happened to him in his life and everything that's happening in the state of the world, because he just seems amazing. Just kind of your takeaways and your thoughts after that, that sit down with Roy Williams.
I think the thing that stands out when you talk to Coach, and it's something that we've talked about in the show a little bit with some of the coaching personalities, is that authenticity is everything, right? Like when he talked about Hurley, he talked about the competitiveness of that family and just being true to who he is. When he talked about Izzo, it was the same thing. And it really hit me as I watched it, even him talking about the people in North Carolina. There's just an authenticity to how he lives his life. And I think sometimes we get so caught up as sports fans and as media, when we cover players and coaches, we get so caught up in, you know, the energy and the excitement. Sometimes you got to step back and you got to ask yourself, like, who is this person I'm covering? And when you ask yourself that, I think you get a much better understanding of the how and the why, the way they answer questions, the way they handle themselves. It just, it stands out to me. And it stood out to me the whole show. As we've talked about big coaches and big brands in college basketball, how authenticity is such a huge part of what creates that.
And when he was talking about North Carolina, it's home, it's my dirt. He grew up in Western North Carolina, seeing the absolute devastation that's happened. Like, there is so much, to your point, authenticity and true, just pure love that he has for that area. And you knew that that kind of trickled into his job when he was coaching at North Carolina. And I think also a very good reminder to all of us that when things fall out of the news cycle and it's not talked about on news or in social media, it's easy for us to forget. But the people in North Carolina, unfortunately, have been living that reality for months now. And unfortunately, we'll be living that reality for time to come. So great to hear the work that he's putting in a place that he loves so much and considers his home. I think another thing that stood out to me was talking about just the current state of basketball, where he was talking about how, you know, I'd always shake a kid's hand. But now when you shake a kid's hand, if he drops 30 on you, it's like a little bit of a shaking of a hand and a wink, wink, nudge, nudge. Like, you'll be on my team next year. Thank you, transfer portal. But he mentioned, too, of all the changes in sports and college sports, at the root of it is you just love ball. Like, he just loves to enjoy watching basketball. And we talk a lot about NIL and transfer portal and how that's ruining college sports. But at the end of the day, when you sit down and watch a game, it's because you just truly love it. And all of those things, all of the red tape and the legislature and all of the stuff on social media all just seems to kind of go away, Ice.
Yeah, as a hooper through and through, that's what carries you through. You know, that's what gets you through those down years as a player when you're not winning as much or you're not playing as much. As a coach, that's what gets you through years in which you have a below 500 record or you get upset in the first or second round of the tournament. Like, your love for the game, your love for the game. I also think, too, very clear in that, you know, his love for relationships, the admiration that he showed for these other coaches, the Dan Hurleys, the Tom Izzos. Like, it's so important as a competitor to have so much respect and admiration for those that you compete against. We see it all the time, I think, with players. Cade Cunningham comes to mind, you know, as someone who's publicly said, I don't like this other guy, and that's okay. And this other guy doesn't like me, and that's okay. And sometimes in the coaching world, we see that or we think that or we speculate that, but it's also nice just to really hear what actually exists, the relationships that are actually built, the respect that is there between competitors. So yeah, Jason, that was an awesome opportunity for you to have the chance to chat it up with him. Legends, couple legends.
No, he was great. And I will stress one more time that, I mean, realistically, they are calling, what, 6,500 people to tell them that they're getting rid of all of their bills after destruction. And yeah, you know, I just think that's such a powerful moment for coach. And, you know, it's a reminder that college sports are so much more than just the wins and the losses. College sports are the connection between the coaches and the administrators and the students and the community forever. And man, that's the most powerful thing that Roy Williams will continue to give the world, is like his heart and his love for that area. It's just, it resonates through and through. And that's the most powerful thing. That's the thing that the NFL will never match in college football. That's the thing that the NBA will never match like college basketball does. Like, there's a different connection to the schools, the cities, the communities when it's deep rooted in the colleges. It's a special thing.
No doubt. I know our hearts go out to Asheville, the entire area of Western Carolina that was affected by the hurricane, and of course, all of those like Roy Williams that are working to help rebuild their communities. Great job, Fitz. Appreciate y'all. That's going to do it for us today. He is Jason Fitz. You can catch him on Twitter at Jason Fitz. She is at IceYoung23. I am at CarolineFenton1. College Basketball Power Hour. We are here every single week. So tell your friends, tell an enemy, tell Rick Pitino, because I might need a halftime speech like he just gave his team. It was awesome. Give it a listen if you haven't. So, and also give us a like, a subscribe, a review, however you interact with the podcast. Always appreciate y'all for stopping by. We'll be back next week, and we're out.